Welcome to episode 4 of the Engineer's Corner podcast, where Minco engineers talk about the company's products and the challenges we encounter along the way. Minco has been in business since 1956, and we specialize in heaters, sensors, instruments, and flex circuits. We have offices and factories in the US, Europe, and Asia, supplying components for some of the world's most demanding applications. In this episode of the podcast, we're tackling the topic of Minco's new product introduction process, which has been recently revamped to make it work across all the product areas of the company. Today I have Brian Williams, the product marketing manager, Brian Myers, the sensors engineering manager, Paul Afif, the thermal solutions engineering manager, Tom Hart, the director of engineering, and I'm John Batesdale, and I'm the producer. So maybe we could start off with Brian Williams. What does the MPI process do to help the customer?
Well, for me, John, the MPI process, I'm more involved in the front end, up front of brand new solutions and designs that we're working on. And a part of the process where we're gathering all the customer requirements and documenting it and making sure that we're able to meet all of those customer requirements is, for me, the most important thing. And our part of our process is dynamic and it's fluid. So that customer requirements kind of checklist and sheet that we use changes as we learn about new things, as we deal with different applications that might be in medical or aerospace or other target markets for us. So that's what I really like in terms of, you know, us understanding what the customer needs, even sometimes more than they are initially articulate.
Yeah, I think, building off customer requirements, I think one of the things we talk the most about is the faster time to market, which doesn't necessarily mean the fastest release of a prototype being just one stage of it. But as we look at getting those customer requirements captured a little bit more accurately up front, it prevents any fallbacks as you get into development. Also looking at things like performance verification, and making sure we have a more robust plan around those as we get past prototypes to make sure the products are going to be in alignment with the customer application needs for some of those. So faster time to market really looks at the overall process and making sure we design right the first time.
I think it also helps us to improve the product in general too. There's a lot of questions that we ask that are part of our customer requirements worksheets that we've developed based on many years of experience. Sometimes our customers don't think of those things when they're developing their drawings and their idea for the product, and when we ask those things, it gives us ideas about how we could make it better if we want to add some feature, some additional sensor, or some extra thermal protection, other things like this. So I think it helps make the product better or better for our customers and for their customers.
I liken the MPI process to a little bit like project management, and when you think of that, there are the three magic, we'll say, kind of stools of the, or points on the triangle of quality, schedule, and cost. And so with our NPI process, we've kind of talked a little bit about, you know, when it comes to quality, the requirements and working with our customers to define their requirements. In some cases, they're not defined. And so our understanding the customer's application helps to kind of flush some of those out. And then with regard to the schedule, we recognize that schedule is paramount with a lot of the new product launches for our customer. So we built a scalable process that allows us to go faster when the risks are lower. And then lastly, on costs, we kind of focus on total cost of ownership. So when it comes to customers kind of defining the requirements, we work with them to identify what are some of those things that are cost drivers and things that we can adjust in the design to optimize, you know, materials or labor throughout the process. And then share that with the customers for optimization.
We just recently revamped our MPI process. Is that right?
The process started. We did a kind of an overhaul in 2015. So and then on an annual basis, we've looked at kind of doing continuous improvement to the process. And currently, in 2019, we're going through an initiative around improving the launch to production, along with some of the engineering efficiency. So it's been in place for a few years, but on a regular basis, we go through improvement activities.
And I think one of the big things that I like with the improvement activities that are happening right now is in many times the you know, the solution that we provide to the customer that gives them the best bang for their buck is one that what we call integrated, where we're utilizing technologies from all of our product groups around our entire campus. And sometimes, you know, some of the other processes are in different levels of maturity, and so we're working to try to make sure all product groups are kind of singing from the same sheet of music, the same processes, the same language and definitions, so that when we go in and use some equipment or capabilities in all areas, it's quicker for us to do that, and also the outcomes are repeatable.
Do we have any examples of a recent use of our MPI process to help the customer?
Yeah, I guess one piece of it that we probably encounter every week throughout the different product areas is the amount of business that Minco does internationally. So as part of that initial discovery stage, making sure we have that good understanding of requirements, we're often getting specifications in Japanese, German, English, from all parts of the world, and making sure we have a good understanding of those early on as we get into the first step of development. We're putting together specification drawings that go out for customer approval so that they can read our interpretation of those, make sure material types and performance specifications were accurately translated, and get that feedback before we get into delivery of prototypes so that there's no surprises for the customers.
We just recently, late last week, completed a test that was a low temperature test for Smart Heat product for a specific customer. And that was something identified during the review of the customer requirements, that the product was gonna have to reside in anywhere between minus 40 to 0°C environment, and that was gonna have to function, basically the heater wouldn't exceed 60°C. In any of those cases, and that it would also at least achieve a minimum of 10°C. And so we had to verify that. Verification is part of the process that we, when any customer requirement or expectation, we have a plan to determine that we meet it. And so one, in this case, not in the case of every product we make, but in this case, it required actual functional testing in our lab in an environmental chamber. So as an example of during the development process, before we ship product to our customer, we're making sure that it does what it's supposed to in at least a lab environment, then our customer does validation later on and in an actual environment.
And I have an example too, going back to Tom's kind of the project management triangle, you know, and looking at cost. And we were working with a vet med customer that needed a heater sensor that was going to be put onto a piece of metal. And they were a little bit late in their process, but they actually had prints generated that they gave to us. And the prints had a fair amount of detail around, you know, max temperature, minimum temperature. But the whole story about what they were trying to accomplish didn't necessarily jump off the page of that print. So when our engineering team was using our MPI checklist and going through all of the different questions that we want to have answered so that we can verify that our solution meets expectations, it came out that there was a requirement of heating from a certain temperature to a maximum temperature in a 5-minute time frame. And that kind of opened up a lot of possibilities for us cost-wise, because what we saw on the print from a metalwork standpoint was going to be, you know, really awesome in terms of it was aluminum, had great thermal conductivity, and it definitely would heat up in that time frame, probably would heat up in 2 minutes instead of 5 minutes. But we learned that 2 minutes didn't really buy them anything. As long as it was less than 5 minutes, that was it. And so then we started looking at alternative processes to make that heat sink, and we settled upon a vacuum die cast process that ended up coming to fruition with us having a heat sink that was going to be on the order of like $2 instead of a machined aluminum part that was going to be on the order of $15 a part. And that all came out through that kind of question and answering part of our MPI process.
All right, so should we go through the actual steps?
Sure, in the discovery phase?
Yeah. Okay, so our process consists of a discovery phase, design, prototype, and production. Brian, do you want to start off with our discovery phase?
Yeah, maybe I guess just talking a little bit about all the phases. Mintco deals with a pretty broad market spectrum. So we have everything from industrial applications using a lot of standard or configured products. We have medical, which has a long qualification and gestation period through development. We have aerospace, which has a very high reluctance for change. All of these each come with their own development process, and so a lot of the terminology out there differs from one market segment to the other. Kind of the segments here that we're going to talk about capture some of the key deliverables or milestones as you progress through each of those. And so more importantly than maybe the naming conventions is for us is making sure we have stages of our development process that align with customer development so that when we're talking about where we're at, we have a unified expectation of what level of thoroughness or completeness we have for some of these. So the first one at the discovery level, so this is really where our engineers and sales team is engaging with the customer to just understand the basic application and the requirements around what it is that we're looking to develop for those. So customer requirements, we've talked a lot about those and the importance of getting those in accurately up front so that we can make a proper review of the design and make sure that it's within some of the capabilities for us to manufacture as we scale up. And then also getting an early risk assessment, looking at the features, the tolerances, the things that we're gonna have to make sure we can commit to meeting both from a cost and a schedule long-term, keeping us in an area where we're able to produce something repeatably so that we don't have long-term fallout potential as we get into production.
And I think the risk assessment area, too, we run into it a lot of times in terms of operating temperature of our different components, temperature sensors or heaters or even flex that drives us to a certain material stack up or different epoxies that we need to use. And so a lot of times we will sit down and say, all right, to meet 100% of everything that's on the print with, you know, 0.0% risk, we're gonna have to use the most expensive, the highest temperature materials, but then we can also present some options to our customer at that point in the process that might introduce a little bit more risk, but then we can at least talk to the customers on how we're gonna manage that to maybe get something that might be a little less expensive for the long haul.
I think one of the things that differentiates us from our competition is that when customers request a quote from us, it isn't always just in a document sent right back to them. It's oftentimes that we're trying to engage them with the discussion. Some customers want a build-to-print quotation, which we will provide, but we also try to engage them in more discussion, and our quotations typically come back with additional notes and clarifications and more valuable feedback than what our competition might say. We try to address all of the risks and concerns up front to make sure that we're aligned with our customers so that when we move into the design phase that there's no surprises. That as much as we know at the time of discovery phase is shared with our customer.
So after you have all the customer requirements, you move on to the design phase. Paul, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So in the discovery phase, we've basically aligned with our customer as much as we possibly can. And then the design phase begins basically the execution of what it is that we've talked with them about. That's creating all the documentation. That includes sometimes a drawing, assembly instruction packet for capturing data so that we can provide that to our customer. So there's a number of different documents depending on the product type. And then we're also looking at materials that we need to purchase, procure, and determining who the suppliers are going to be, working with them closely on the requirements that we expect from them. And then also looking at additional options for product integration. We may still continue to work with our customers on this. So if we find some feature or improvement during the design phase, we're not locked at this point. We still have communication with the customer. And we also are looking at manufacturability and regulatory compliance. And then additional means of verifying any customer requirements, we're working through those things. So we're doing any material testing, simulation, analysis type work. And at kind of the end of that, we're also producing any tools, any CAD files, CAM files that are needed to operate machines that are going to be used to build the product. As part of this, integrated throughout the entire design process, there are different stages where there's reviews. Early on, for example, there's a peer review with an engineer, another engineer is working with the main Cognizant engineer, and then there's also reviews with technicians, reviews with some of our drafting and designer group, kind of integrated throughout the overall process. And then at the end of it, before we build anything, there is a final review. And in some cases, especially where there's a Minco created drawing, that we would have a review with our customer to make sure that we're, before we start building anything, we're in alignment with them.
And one of the things that we can do on our end is to offer an integrated product. Ryan Williams, do you want to talk a little bit about how we can, during the design process, help suggest improvements to the design?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, there's integration and or there's adding, you know, multiple components. You know, many times we will get an inquiry from a customer that might want one of our product sets, and then we will sit down and say, you know, ask those questions in terms of, you know, for a heater, for instance, you know, it's got to heat up. How are you going to control it? How are you going to temperature sense that? And does it make sense to use our capability to basically putting that sensor on board onto the heater, maybe putting some pick and place components right on board onto the heater itself, maybe on a little flex circuit? Or does it make sense for us to potentially break it apart into three places? We do that as well, where we are, you know, building a board level controller and selling that separate that goes along with the heater. We also make some standalone sensors that we can then take and maybe screw in and epoxy into threaded holes that are into the heatsink. So sometimes there's integration into the whole component itself. Sometimes there's just providing a plug and play assembly, and we try to evaluate that early on in the design phase, with the end goal for the customer is giving them the best total installed part, where they're maybe saving on labor on their end, and or saving on labor to reach out to multiple sources to try to source multiple components, where they can lean on Minco as kind of being that one neck to grab if that will take care of everything for them.
An area of the NPI process that has helped to improve our success with integrated products has been the harmonization of the NPI process. We've aligned on the some of the tools, the processes, the steps, kind of the inputs and outputs that flow from one phase to another that go across all three product groups at Minco. And by doing that, it's improved the efficiency and reduced some of the, you know, gaps or issues that have come up as a result of products and designs crossing some of the product group lines.
Hey, John, I wanted to go back to, I'm going to go back to Paul's part of it a little bit, and I wanted to pick up on two things that he said. One was the DFM. The design for manufacturability in the design phase, which is a little unique for Minco, I think, over some of our competitors, because we, you know, as you mentioned, we've been in business for 40 plus years, and we're not necessarily here just to build form, fit, and function prototypes. We're here to build year over year production units. And so our engineers, even though we're trying to get form, fit, and function prototypes out quickly, we're not just here for quick turn. We're here and we're using our skills to design for high volume manufacturing or medium volume manufacturing. So we're using all of those skills and capabilities way up front to maybe steer our customers to the best long-term solution for that. And then the other thing I wanted to pick up, which is constantly kind of coming up on my desk and on my watch right now, is cosmetics and kind of managing your suppliers, sub-tier suppliers, and that comes out of our MPI process as well. Most of our customers, when they bring something to us that might have some metal work on it, where we're screwing in a sensor or laminating a heatsink, don't give a lot of thought as to what's going to happen to it when it gets put into their instrument and gets put out into the field. And we learn about that way late in the process, and we're bringing that up front and trying to make sure that we're on the same page with the cosmetic specs. And then that usually flows down to our machine shop or our die casting shop sub-supplier that's putting coatings on it. Could be an anodize, could be an iridite, could be a paint that's put on there. And so we're working through our MPI process to try to flow those specifications down multiple levels to try to make sure that we have good products.
I think another point to mention in the design phase is that it's a team approach on pretty much every product. There's several people involved. They're assigned early on, and they are pretty much there for the entire life cycle of the product. They're the main team that works to resolve any issues later on. And so because of that, as Brian mentioned, the DFM is an important part of it early on, and that ownership continues. And so we, for example, have design engineer, manufacturing engineer, our designer, technicians that build the product. Right before we begin all development of the tooling and everything, there's a meeting where they talk about what the plan is. And then after all the tooling is developed and completed, before we actually build anything, that whole team gets together again to talk about how did we execute on that, and then, you know, what all the tools look like, and then to approve the release of the build. So, and then much later on, as we'll talk about other phases, that same team continues through, you know, prototyping and production launch and continuation eventually.
Yeah, the design phase, looking internally, is also kind of that fun exploration zone for engineers. So Minco has over 100 engineers through helping with these different pieces of it, manufacturing, design, quality. Minco's engineers really not afraid of a technical challenge. So where some of our competitors might try to stay within some swim lanes, our customers are often trying to go be faster, stronger, more uniform. Whatever the challenge might be is something that our engineers take to in the design phase that really helps us with maybe some proof of concept around our process or our materials, where we're pushing the limits beyond where we've experienced in the past, and being able to vet those out, and of course tying that back and having a good understanding what that means for risk, whether that could potentially risk a schedule or a cost implication down the road, matching those together early on and vetting some of those out during the design phase helps us avoid any surprises with our customers as we move through into our deliverables.
So let's move on to the prototype phase. Ryan, do you want to talk a little bit about the various steps that go into that?
Yeah, so I mean, Brian Williams mentioned we tool things up and we try to make sure we're prepared for the higher volume manufacturing, and prototyping is the way to kind of vet some of those out. But also from a tooling standpoint, it's not always economical right out the bat to have that ready. So during prototype, we're going to be tooling up with small volume tools, and also assessing what we're going to need long term for manufacturability as we scale up. Our prototype technicians will be carrying through and making that first run build, oftentimes using a lot of manufacturing processes, but using a more critical eye as we move through those, doing better documentation or taking photos that are going to help enable assemblers down the road to better understand the requirements, and then also taking those through a little bit more robust level of inspection or verification. So testing those parts, doing qualification tests, and then ultimately bringing all of that back to a post-build review. We talked a little bit about some of the continuous improvement going on this year, which is really focused on that phase between prototype and production and making sure that we have the right handoff and the right information feedback. So the post-build review meeting is really the opportunity to bring that feedback from the prototype tech who was building on the floor, some of the tooling that we used for the first time, or maybe some materials or processes that we are exploring to try and meet new requirements. All of those have that post-build review discussion and help drive whether we're ready and able to move forward, or if there's some more things that we should explore from a development standpoint before getting that ready.
Paul, did you have anything to add to the prototype phase?
Yeah, sure, a few things. So you can't really sometimes verify certain requirements without actually building a product. You have to build something and test it. Then our customers also need to validate that it meets the performance requirements. oftentimes they will realize, our customers or Minco will realize an opportunity to improve a product after it's been built. And we sometimes will go back through the design phase again, either based on our own internal observations or our customers' observations. And so sometimes this design phase and prototype phase, there may be multiple iterations. I will say one of the benefits of Minco is that we try to address as much as possible in that first design phase through additional tools that we have for testing materials, doing thermal analysis and other types of calculations to predict better what the actual built product will do. And so we try to reduce those iterations as much as possible.
And I think on prototype phase, there's kind of two things to keep in mind. Number one, so I think there's important to realize two things to keep in mind when you're in the prototype phase. Number one is alignment with our customers and where our customers are in their development process. So many times, our products, unfortunately, maybe it's fortunate for Minco, but unfortunately, sometimes our customers don't realize they need a heat or an interconnect or a temperature sensor until they're very late in the process. And they come to us and they've already been pretty far along. So they're like in a pre-production process, but they're asking us to build kind of a one-of-a-kind prototype, and we're still back in the prototype area. As we work together, we need to know the pros and cons of where we're at versus where they're at, so we have good expectations. Or maybe Minco might have to move a little bit more rapidly and not be able to build things like what Paul was talking about, to test a bunch of things up front. We might have to move into saying, okay, we know we can set up with production tooling, we can essentially build the print, and we can be aligned with where you're at in pre-production. Anyhow, it's just a communication and a conversation that needs to happen up front, and our salespeople with the NPI process that we have a better chance of kind of articulating where our position is relative to where the customers are so that we can get aligned.
But getting back to your previous point, you mentioned that people come late in the process and they don't get to take advantage of our MPI process really because they're ignoring like the discovery phase and the design phase. They're doing all that. They're just coming late in the game. They miss out on a lot of the advantages of working with us because A, we have this great process, but also we have experts that can talk to them early on and give them good advice on how they could make their product easier to manufacture or less expensive in the long run.
I think Brian made a good point, is that sometimes customers, they want to be ramping really quickly and they expect that, but we also have those ideas that come about when we see it, and they don't have time to implement all of them. And so we have the flexibility to potentially launch a simpler product and then in parallel be testing something with additional features or improved performance on the side and doing a design and prototype phase for those features, and then merging that in at some point in the future. We do that very frequently.
I have a couple of things in my mind right now that we're doing right now where, I mean, we have sat down with our customers. One happens to be in the DNA medical space and one happens to be in a dental space, where we are satisfying their production with a current solution, but they know that they want to move to a different solution that we put on the table, but that solution cannot get implemented until they do a next generation of their instrument. But we're kind of working in tandem, testing and prototyping those ultimate, maybe they're higher performing solutions for less cost, or they're just sheerly, less cost solutions as well. I do remember the other thing on prototyping that's a little unique with Minco, maybe than if you go to what's kind of known as a quick turn house or a prototyping house. For the large majority of what we are prototyping in the prototyping phase, all of the equipment and even the tooling that we're putting together are being used in our mass production types of equipment. So like when we go to a lamination, we don't have separate kind of lab-based autoclaves that are down in our technician area. We're using our production autoclaves. When we're doing etching, we're using our etching machines that we use for high volume. we're just essentially time slicing in with some high skilled technicians, engineering technicians that can build these parts very rapidly. So I guess we get kind of the benefit of using our production equipment even in the prototyping phase.
All right, speaking of production phase, let's move on to that. Paul, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I'll jump in and talk about that one.
All right, cool.
So yeah, the production phase is ultimately the phase that we hope to get into. It's where the cash register rings. And this is where the involvement of other roles outside of engineering play a bigger part. And I say play a bigger part, that's not their first involvement. Often in the design phase and prototyping phase, there's involvement from sales, marketing, purchasing, quality, and operations. But this is where there's a little bit of a transition of responsibilities. And kind of the first portion of the production phase, we've dubbed a kind of the first pre-production run called first run. So it's a term Minco has used. It's been effective in how it's been deployed, in that during this process, we're involving some of the production operators to build the product. At the same time, we're still making refinements to the tooling, to the work instructions, to even some of the methods. So it's been really helpful in gathering some feedback from real life kind of shop floor type manufacturing. And so the operators provide photos, they provide feedback as far as how to make something a little bit more manufacturable, and other things, you know, how to clarify the documentation so that as going forward, we essentially have kind of an incident-free, fault-free, repeatable process. And so that's kind of the first step of the production phase is going through that pre-production. And there's what we call a first-run post-build review, so it's similar to the prototype post-build review that Brian mentioned earlier. And this is a point where we gather a lot of that feedback and then fold it back into the process. Remaining parts of the production phase involved creating a robust manufacturing plan. This would entail, you know, do we need to set up a separate work cell? Do we need to implement an additional automation through the process? Do we have the resources, both from a material and labor standpoint, to support the customer schedule? You know, if a customer provides us with a commercialization schedule of I need 500 or 1,000 a week, what does Minco need to do to make sure that we're not a constraint for that demand? So that all takes place in some of that manufacturing planning and production launch phase. Along with materials, you know, procurement, the purchasing group is involved earlier in the process, but this is where they might get into looking at some larger scale buys for material, and eventually leading to kind of then sustained production.
Does anyone have any final thoughts about the MPI process?
No, I think that was a pretty good description of the production expectations as we move forward into launch. I think maybe important to note that it's not a linear process. Sometimes the earlier you get involved, the less things are well understood. And so as programs evolve with customers, we might find performance expectations changed, or design or fit might have changed. And in those cases, we're going to go right back to prototype, make sure that we've accurately captured those and implement those at a prototype level before we get into production. So production's really trying to lock that down and make sure operations has a good, clear set of instructions that we can sustain for the life of a program as they move through. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's one phase into the next. If we have to reiterate or make some changes, we're certainly able to do that, and flexibility within the design process to make sure that happens.
One more thought on the production phase, that it doesn't necessarily end. We continue to improve our products over time. We look for opportunities to reduce the labor and improve the yields, and we also continue to work with our customers to make sure we are competitive on our cost. And so there's things that we're constantly reviewing on every product. So,
and I guess I'll say on the MPI process overall is, you know, I get the opportunity to sit on quite a few customer audits that they come in on an annual basis or a biannual basis, or it's just part of the AS9100 auditing structure. And we go through the MPI process pretty closely with those folks. And it's difficult to show on the podcast, but we do have a tool that our engineers all use that we call our MPI workbook, that allows our engineers to kind of step through the process and know where they're at. And all of the customer auditors that get a chance to see that usually give us pretty high marks for having a really well thought out process that in the end of the day, you know, allows them to sleep at comfortable at night, that we're doing what we need to do to make sure that they have a good quality design and a good quality product.
I guess another general comment about the NPI process is a lot of what we talked about going through these phases on the customer, we'll call them the customer partnered opportunities, customer partnered projects. The NPI process is also used, you know, for our new product development. So this may be not designed with the intent of a particular customer in mind, but it's something maybe new to market technology that Minco's kind of developing. And we follow the very same process with it, goes through the discovery design phases, making sure we're defining the requirements appropriately, and then satisfying those requirements, and then all through the, you know, prototyping and a launch phase. So again, very, very similar process. Gate reviews at the end of each process to make sure we're meeting the requirements, meeting the expectation, and gives us a chance to kind of revisit work that wasn't completed.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Engineer's Corner, and we'll catch you next time.